Thank you. May it please the court, counsel for the government. The district court erred when it The district court erred when they failed to suppress the evidence against Dwayne Cartwright, because the evidence that was acquired in Mr. Cartwright's case fell squarely against the recently decided Supreme Court case, Arizona versus Gant.
So, Ms. Scott, does the record show whether this parking lot of the Double Eight grocery is private property? You can get some water if you want.
I apologize. I have a slight cold. I believe...
If you'd like some water.
Thank you. I believe that the record does show that the Double Eight Foods parking lot was a private parking lot.
So physically you turn in off the street and there's an area that doesn't block, you know, sidewalks or the traffic in the street.
That is correct. It is what would be a typical grocery store parking lot, at least in Indianapolis, which is that there is a street that runs to one side here and here, and then you could pull into the parking lot on either side, and then there are spaces for various cars to park.
Are there any posted rules about how long people can park there?
There are not, Your Honor.
As far as we know, the car could have stayed there all night while Ms. Galladay found somebody who was able to move it.
That is absolutely correct, Your Honor.
Did this happen at a time that the store was open?
Yes, Your Honor, the store was open. This happened at approximately, if I'm not mistaken, 9:15 in the evening. The grocery store was still open at the time that this occurred. Ms. Galladay testified at the hearing. She was the passenger and owner of the vehicle, as the record shows. She testified that she requested the officer allow her to have her sister remove the car from the parking lot, that she saw someone in the parking lot that she was familiar with and asked the officer if that person could remove the car from the parking lot.
But the officers were not required to have some third party drive the car, were they? I mean, that's not something that they had to do.
Your Honor, it is not a requirement. However,
but what I'm trying to get at is, why did the car have to be moved at all? I mean, if I let somebody put a car in my driveway off the street, it's up to me whether I want that car to stay there for the next month or whether I would like to have it removed.
Your Honor, and I do agree, I believe the position that the government would take with regard to why the car had to be moved is because it was not placed specifically in a parking space.
It's a sloppy parking job, and so the government can tow people. Boy, I can think of a lot of towing that can happen in parking lots around Chicago. If that's the rule, they can. Okay.
But to address, if I could, whether or not, sorry, now that I can't remember, what was your question?
Oh, Judge Adelman?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
If you could repeat the question, because I don't believe.
My question?
Yes.
Oh, they didn't have to let somebody, her sister or some third party, they didn't say, oh, well, get whoever you want. I mean, that was not any requirement on their part.
Your Honor, while it was not a requirement, a careful look at the IMPD towing policy does indicate that if there is someone available to remove the car, that they should, in fact, even if the tow truck is there, release the car to the person who would arrive at the time. The reason why no one was there to remove Ms. Galladay's vehicle was because she was told that they were not allowed to move the vehicle. And, in fact, the young lady that she knew that came through the parking lot was not allowed to move the vehicle. She was not allowed to enter into the Double Eight food store to ask someone who she was familiar with to move the vehicle, nor was she allowed to ask a mere stranger to move the vehicle.
So, again, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to focus on, to be as clear as I can be, is it seems to me there are a couple of steps here that may have been conflated all into one. One step is, did the police have the right to impound this car at all when it was not located on the public street and not at any risk of traffic, but it was in fact located in private property? Maybe the people who run the Double Eight couldn't care less if people park inside the lines that are drawn on their parking lot or not. again, if it's private property. So if there was a right to impound, then I frankly think you lose, because as soon as there's a valid impoundment, the police have every right to do an inventory search in the car. Even if they hadn't found the gun earlier, they would have found it at that point. End of discussion. But if there was no right to impound up front, then why would you have been searching the car? What's there to inventory? Why couldn't the car have stayed there as long as the owner of the store was satisfied?
Well, Your Honor, we don't believe that there was a right to impound the vehicle, but I believe the record makes it very clear that the reason why they impounded the vehicle was because they found the gun. And in
Where was the car parked in a lane, or was it just overlapping the side of a parking place?
Your Honor,
was it blocking two? Was it occupying two parking places, or was it in the lane between rows of parked cars?
The parking lot doesn't have rows of parking per se. There are parking slots that would be, say, on the north end of the parking lot, and then parking slots that would be on the south end of the parking lot. And then there's a wide area in between those parking spots. And Mr. Cartwright, the vehicle that he was operating, was parked perpendicular. Correct.
But didn't the police department have a right to tow just because of it was being operated by a person who was under arrest? I mean, isn't that enough? And that there was no. Isn't there policy that says that when it was being operated by a non-licensed or suspended driver or by a person under custodial arrest for any charge? Isn't that their policy?
That is a part of their policy, but a key part of their policy is that it says may, not shall. So it's discretionary in a sense.
So if they exercise their discretion, isn't that the end of it?
Your Honor, it could be viewed that way, but, Your Honor, I don't think that it ends that way, because the policy goes further to say if there's someone to remove the car prior to the towing of the vehicle, that person should be allowed to move the vehicle. So the car did not have to be towed. It certainly didn't have to be towed by virtue of the location.
What would have happened to it if they just left it there and taken Cartwright away?
Ms. Galladay would have had a licensed driver come and remove the vehicle.
Licensed driver? What licensed driver?
Well, her sister is the person that she had contacted immediately.
Didn't the police get in trouble if they just arrest the driver and they just leave the car there?
No, Your Honor. They could not get in trouble. The police don't have the purpose of inventory.
I mean, if the police, look, this is valuable property, a car. If they just abandon it after they've arrested the driver.
But the owner.
Wait a second. That's my question.
Huh? Your Honor, the owner was the passenger. So if the owner stays with her vehicle and asks another person to come and remove her vehicle, how are the police culpable? I don't think that they are. I don't think that there's any liability on the police if something happens to the vehicle if the owner is left with the vehicle.
So she calls up and no one is there, and what? Then what does she do?
Your Honor, the record shows that she was familiar with several people inside the 88 food store because her mother-in-law was an employee at that store. So I don't think that there was simply one person that she could have contacted to move her vehicle.
So is it your view that the Fourth Amendment requires, it's a fiction, that the decisions require the police to make a kind of case-by-case determination of whether leaving the car is safe because there are other drivers to take it home? Is that your argument? I didn't think that was your argument, but...
No, that's not my argument. However, there is a Seventh Circuit case that says if there's the ability for the car to be removed or taken care of by another person, then it is patently unreasonable to tow the vehicle in United States.
I understand if there's another driver in the car, but I'm concerned about whether they have to consider how likely it is that a phone call to another person will result in the car being driven away.
Well, your
starts accumulating parking tickets or whatever.
Well, Your Honor,
in Duguay, it was on the street, right? There'd be no parking. The private property aspect of this strikes me, anyway, as a significant fact.
That is correct, Your Honor. There was no reason why the car had to be towed by virtue of its location.
It has a taillight out. It's not supposed to be driven because there's a property defect as well as nobody else, too. Isn't that a problem?
There was a license plate light that was the basis for the stop.
Right, however, so you're not supposed to have the car, that's not supposed to be driven then, right?
Your Honor, even if a licensed driver could have pulled the car into a parking space until the license plate light could be turned out, I believe it's doubtful that most people pulled over.
Wait until morning or something? I don't understand. Well, wait until it's light?
Or
the car waiting for the morning to come? So you don't need the light and the...
I'll just say I believe it's probably doubtful that most persons that are pulled over for a license plate light have their cars towed in Indiana. It is doubtful that most of the time...
Doubtful, but is it illegal?
Your Honor,
weren't the police acting? Isn't there a good faith defense now to these?
Your Honor, we don't believe that the good faith exception applies in this case. We do realize that. We believe that the rationale that was employed in the Gonzalez case from the Ninth Circuit is the appropriate one, which is that
the Herring case, doesn't that trump the Ninth Circuit?
Yeah, the Herring case does trump the Ninth Circuit. However, the Herring case, if I'm not mistaken, it was more of a administrative type of error that was the basis for Herring.
Why is that a different type of error from this, if they overstepped the bounds and should have allowed the car to remain there?
Because the basis for the tow in this case wasn't administrative. It was based upon a search that occurred based upon...
The question for the police is whether they're authorized to impound the car. And if they make a reasonable judgment that they are, even if a court later disagrees, why isn't that good faith? Why shouldn't that be a defense?
Well, the impoundment's only relevant if we're trying to decide whether there's inevitable discovery. The police, in fact, here have already violated the Fourth Amendment by seizing the gun. So, where does the good faith inquiry come in? The seizure of the gun or the impoundment?
The good faith inquiry would come with the seizure of the gun.
Okay, well, thank you. I'll give you a chance to rebut.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Scott. Mr. McCoskey?
May it please the Court. The District Court's judgment should be affirmed, Your Honor. The District Court did not err in denying the motion to suppress because, quite frankly, the inevitable discovery doctrine did permit the gun to be admitted as evidence here.
So I want you to continue with this question whether the impoundment on private property is legitimate. Because as I understand your position, if I let my son park his car in my driveway and he happens to have the light over the license plate out and hasn't gotten around to fixing it yet, the local police can come tow the car away from my driveway.
Your Honor, the argument that we're making is simply that what the police did here under the circumstances was proper,
But why is my case different? If it's okay with the owner of the private property for the car to be parked there, and if the owner is satisfied to wait until whatever mechanical difficulties there may be are resolved, and the owner of the car is confident that the car can be locked until an appropriate person to move it, why do the police get to say, oh no, you know, we're going to tow it anyway?
Your Honor, this is not the case where the police just happened along and saw a car with all respect
sitting
there.
They've already violated the Fourth Amendment and seized the gun. But
right.
You're trying retroactively to justify the violation of the Fourth Amendment. So we have to pretend that the police just see this car in a parking lot and think, oh, you know, looks like a license plate. It looks like they're a lousy parker or something. We're going to seize the car. Because that, as I said, if you can get as far as justifying the impoundment, I think your inevitable discovery argument is airtight. because certainly would have under the proper inventory procedures of the Indianapolis Police Department, they would have found the gun and whatever else was in that car.
Well, Your Honor, the policy at issue, of course, the impoundment policy, does not really directly address your concern. That is true. Whether or not, you know, if it's a private parking lot, whether or not the police are on safe ground making an impoundment decision with the caretaking of the street's purpose in mind.
Well, that's right. This is not Duguay, in other words. Duguay, actually, which doesn't come out your way either, but it's the police have every legitimate reason, if the car is out on the street, to do something with it. But I want to know what's the difference between this parking lot and my house.
Well, there's two differences, at least, Your Honor. The first one is, I know there was some question, it appears that there's some question in the record whether or not this particular car was parked, even though it's in a private lot, whether it's in a parking spot or whether it may impede traffic.
Maybe the owner of the store doesn't care at all whether people, especially at 9 o'clock at night, are parking meticulously.
Well, I again say, Your Honor,
why is that the police's concern?
Isn't your answer to Judge Wood's question that the car was being operated by somebody who's under custodial arrest?
Yes, Your Honor, and that's the point I was going to get to, is the impoundment policy directly addresses the circumstances here, a person without a valid driver's license and someone who was under custodial arrest, and the police are entitled to impound a car under those circumstances. That's exactly what happened here. And to me, to get back directly to your question, Judge Wood, I feel that the circumstance that you're raising falls largely under the broad heading of the less intrusive alternative, that the Supreme Court dispensed with that notion, and this court dispensed with that notion in Cherry. There's no requirement under the policy that the person whose car is being towed.
Well, I wasn't really arguing that, actually. I was. I understand that, you know, the police can take the most intrusive alternative possible every time, but it seems to me that you are advocating for a very troubling theory of police ability to come on private property, countermand the wishes of the owner of the car and the owner of the private property, because somebody was driving the car who now has been arrested.
But, Your Honor, with respect, I would say that the alternative is also a troubling policy, because now the police would be required to track down an owner and say, hey, is it okay if this person
didn't
parks?
Didn't have to track anybody down. She was sitting right there. That might be a completely different case if the owner was nowhere near. In fact, I do think it would be a completely different case.
The car was not legally drivable at the time, Your Honor.
And it wasn't going to be driven. It could have stayed in the private property for a month while somebody got a little light put in the license plate.
But I don't believe, Your Honor, that any case law out there says that it's the responsibility of the police to make those determinations. You know, is it okay, is it reasonable for us to just leave a car here that can't legally be driven,
with the owner standing right there?
Your Honor, under the policy itself, it does not provide
kind of
that.
A nanny state approach, you know, you're saving the owner from herself?
Your Honor, it's not a nanny state approach to say,
sure,
look, there's a car that's not drivable.
She's perfectly happy with the car there.
But again, you know, the police...
I thought she was going to call someone to pick the car up.
That is, there is some dispute over whether or not that came up in the suppression hearing. That is true, Your Honor. But again...
Well, that would be illegal, right?
For someone to come and,
right,
and drive a car that's not legally drivable.
There's a collision, and then the police are blamed.
Yes, Your Honor. Or it could be, as you surmised earlier, if the car just sat there and the police left and everyone left and the car was stolen or vandalized, these are the sorts of things why it falls directly into the caretaking of the streets function, even though, Judge Wood, I understand it's not the streets we're talking about here, but what we are talking about is what
private
the police
property
are allowed to do. Sorry, Your Honor.
Oh, well, I guess there's no privacy anyway, so...
But even putting that aside, Your Honor, even if it's true that the police made some mistake in deciding to impound the car, or if the inventory search thereafter was somehow improper, the good faith exception applies anyway.
I see how it applies to the finding of the gun. It might apply to whatever issues there were about the seizure of the car, good faith exception. But the seizure of the car, that is to say the taking of somebody's property, is different from the seizure of the gun, which occurred earlier.
But, Your Honor, after all, the gun itself is the evidence of the of crime of conviction.
I understand that. You're trying to justify your warrantless seizure of the gun. And I have no problem if you had warrantlessly seized the car, good faith, all these things. Maybe this is a very fuzzy area. I wouldn't have any trouble with a good faith approach to that. But to then pull it back into the seizure of the gun seems to me not rational.
Well, Your Honor, the gun was located in a search incident to arrest, as counsel has argued here.
Well, that's Gantt problem.
That it is the Gantt problem, Your Honor, but again, the good faith exception applies here.
But
the exclusionary
rule
should not apply.
The Supreme Court's never applied that to overruled case law. I mean, that would be a big, huge jump in the good faith argument to say, well, hey, if there's a case that's later overruled and the cops can, I mean, wouldn't that be a big step?
Your Honor, it certainly would be, and you're absolutely right. It hasn't. The Supreme Court hasn't ruled on this specific issue, whether a pre-Gantt search, you know, should be subject to the good faith exception analysis. But I think, as we argued in our brief, the 10th and 11th Circuit in the McCain and the Davis cases, they explained, I think, exactly why the good faith exception should apply here. That is, we're talking about decades-long, very clear, bright-line case law for the police to conduct a search incident to arrest under the exact circumstances that we've got in this case and in those other cases. And it should apply here.
So every time the Supreme Court overrules a search and then the police don't follow the new case, that's okay?
I think that this court, Your Honor, expressed that exact concern in the real property case that we've cited in our brief. But under this exact circumstance, we're talking about the bright-line Belton rule. I'm not trying to say, Your Honor, that we should extend the good faith exception every single time a case is overruled.
The Supreme Court could have saved its time. Why bother to issue Arizona against Gantt if there's always good faith?
Well, and Your Honor, there is a cert petition pending, as we noted in our brief, and it's possible that this exact question will be addressed by the Supreme Court. But we think that in good faith, literally in good faith, we think that the exception should apply here.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. McCoskey. Ms. Scott, your time expired, but you can have another minute if you have anything further.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just briefly, in browsing the record, on page 94 of the transcript for this case, counsel for Mr. Cartwright entered Exhibit A, which was the towing policy for 88 Food Store. It's an affidavit by the Vice President of 88 Food Store, Brad Cross. That exhibit, while it was not attached to counsel's brief and is not present today, states that the towing policy for 88 Foods is that an abandoned vehicle in their parking lot, can remain there for 72 hours before they will call a tow truck to remove the vehicle from their parking lot. So
what is it you envisage happening? The owner is standing there. The police have taken Cartwright. Now what happens next?
Your Honor, since the light is since the license plate light is not working and so the car is not operable, the car should have been allowed to remain in the parking lot until she could have it safely
what
removed.
What time was the arrest?
9 o'clock. About 9:15 at night.
So she's going to spend all night in the parking lot?
No, Your Honor, but I believe that
what's she going to do?
Well, Your Honor, she can allow the car to remain in the 88 Food Store parking lot until the morning. If she says to the officers, I would like my car to remain here, I am okay with my car being here, there's no compelling reason for the officer to save her from herself, to save her car from some additional...
Well, she calls up someone who then drives it and gets into an accident.
Well, Your Honor, then that's a separate issue.
Why is it a separate issue? Don't the police have to worry that here they have a car which can't be driven legally, but they're leaving it in the hands of the owner, who's going to probably not want to spend the night in the parking lot, but instead will call up her sister, or whoever it was, to come and drive it away?
Well, Your Honor, there's nothing to suggest that if the officers told her that the car had to remain there until the license plate light was operable, that she would not have left it there.
So she had 72 hours, actually. She could have locked it and gone home.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct.
How would she get home?
Her mother-in-law stayed not too far from the 88 food store, if I'm not mistaken. It was within walking distance based upon the address that I have and my knowledge of Indianapolis. It's not in the record. But she could have walked. Someone could have come to pick her up. There are multiple options for how she could have left the 88 food slot. But, again, there were other options for the removal of that vehicle and its ability to remain in the parking lot. And 88's food has a policy that they specifically have on their books for that reason. And it's for that reason we ask that you reverse the ruling of the district court and remand for and order them to suppress evidence.
And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes, Your Honor, I am.
Oh, you're a defender.
I am a federal defender, that's correct.
Defenders for their representation of park rights.